Email is important because it's an asset that you own. Like, you could take your email list with you. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to move to a different email software, you can't export your Instagram followers. You can't export your Facebook followers. You can't export your TikTok audience.
Welcome to the One Person Business Podcast, the show for solopreneurs, consultants, and contractors who are ready to take charge of their business and reclaim their freedom. Join us as we bring you inspiring stories, invaluable insights, and practical strategies from successful solopreneurs and industry experts, empowering you to create a thriving business that aligns with your unique goals and allows you to live life on your own terms. Here are your hosts, Joe Rando and Carly Reese.
Welcome to the One Person Business Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Carly Reese.
And I'm Joe Rando.
And Joe, in recent episodes, we've talked a lot about like social media marketing and how we don't love social media marketing and just what solopreneurs should really be focusing on to help grow their business. And something we haven't really dabbled on, which you and I love and which we use so much in Lifestar, are emails. Email marketing, I know people are like, oh, well, I get flooded with emails in my inbox, but it's because they work. And that's a good way to reach out to your community to get the message out that you're looking for. And so we were like, why don't we actually cover this topic? We haven't yet. And it is so important. And we've seen so many benefits from it. So we have on the show today, Chris Orzechowski. He is kind of like an email wizard and we want him to share everything, but he wasn't always that way. And that's what I'm so excited for is I think people get intimidated by writing effective emails. And I know, Chris, you had to work on your craft and we'll get to that story and everything. So even if you don't think this is going to be a strong skill set for you, it absolutely can be and it can work wonders for your business. So Chris, with that being said, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this will be great. Well, and I was talking about, because when we were prepping for this show, you have a very interesting story. You weren't just like, oh, I'm going to be a writer and I'm going to like make millions and millions of dollars for these companies. You actually started off as a teacher, if I'm not mistaken, and then you dove into the world of, you dived dope, gosh, you guys, I never get those words right, into the world of solopreneurship. And now you are where you are today. Can you tell us your story, like your full story and how you ended up here?
Yeah, so I was a public school teacher. I taught special ed. I taught elementary school, third, fourth, and fifth, writing and math. And then I, 2 years after that, I taught eighth grade special ed math. And, like when I was in college, everyone was like picking their majors and figuring out what they wanted to do. I'm like, I never want to do anything, to be honest with you. Like I always joked around in high school. I was like, I want to make a lot of money, but like not doing a whole lot of stuff, right? Which like obviously isn't a job unless you're a successful investor, in which case the whole goal was to just sit on your hands and do nothing and wait for the right opportunity, right? But I was like, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I was a wrestler and I wanted to keep coaching. So I was like, I guess I could be a school teacher and coach. So it was very hard to get a job. Like when I was getting out, it was it'd be like 500 plus people applying for a single teaching job. It was like almost impossible. But I was, I'm male special ed certified, which is like finding a needle in a haystack. Like in my cohort in college, it was all women and then myself. So I got a job like that. It was great. So I kind of like, figured out how to get in. I got the job. But as soon as I started working, it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And I really didn't love it. And I said, I don't know what I want to do, but I knew that like people made money on the internet. And, this was back in 2013. And I was like, well, how does that whole thing work? Right? Like, how do you make money on the internet? Like, what is this? Right? So, and I knew a few people who, like one of my early mentors, his name was Zach Evanesh. He was a strength coach that I worked for. And he would sell eBooks and do all these things. And I was like, that's so cool. Like, it's a digital download and you're getting cash for it. Like, this is crazy. Like, I was just enamored by that whole thing. So I wound up like tumbling down the rabbit hole, starting a bunch of different like blogs and things and, just learning the ins and outs. Like I had to like learn how to do a WordPress site, and learn how to use like Optimized Press and all these like tools and everything. And I had a couple sites that did decent, but I didn't really make a lot of money. But then I discovered like the thing that I was doing every day, like writing copy. Like I had an email list and I was writing emails every day and, blog posts. And I was like, oh, there's this thing called copywriting where you could actually like get paid. Like people pay a lot of money if your copy's good and they run it and they make a lot of money because they'll make a lot of sales for the campaigns you create. So I always loved writing. Like in college, I would always try to take classes where I could write a paper instead of taking an exam. Like I was good at the exams too, but the writing was fun. It was like, you'd be at the computer lab, you'd be on your seventh Red Bull, you know, at 3 a.m. and you just be like cranking out words and, you know, listen to music. And so I was like, how do I just do more of that? And that's what kind of like led me down the rabbit hole initially. And I was, so I taught for 4 years. And during those 4 years, I worked every single day on building up my writing business. And then eventually got to the point where I was making more as a writer working part-time doing that than I was at the teaching job, which luckily, you know, as a teacher, I only had to make more than, you know, $54,000 a year. So it wasn't like, you know, some people are like, yeah, I had like a, you know, a $300,000 tech job. Like that's a tall, you know, that's a tall order to replace that. But I was like, hey, I could do $5,000 a month. You know what I mean? So that's what I did. And then June 16th, 2017 was my last day. I quit and I went full time.
So, okay. I love this story. And I think that's so funny that you shed light on like, oh, I just had to make that much. But what's interesting to me is you said you loved writing in college, but you also said you worked hard at creating, at building your writing business. Did writing come naturally to you, or did you really have to work on that craft?
I think it came natural to me. I think, it definitely did. And I don't like to gloss over this because some people, they're just good at certain things. You know what I mean? And I'm not good at everything. I'm definitely not good at everything. But one thing I am good at is writing. And I feel like I have a bit of, I like to think my dad, he did this big project where he traced our family lineage back, and we were able to track the Wierzykowski name back into like the 1500s. And there's this very famous guy, Stanislaw Wierzykowski, who was like this, you know, big writer back then. So I always like to joke around and be like, oh, it's in my DNA, it's in my blood. Like I have the writing in my blood, you know. So but it always just came natural to me. Like even in college, like sometimes when we'd have parties, I'd write these back when you used to do Facebook invites, you know, we'd be drinking and I'd get on the computer and start writing these elaborate invites, and people would like laugh, and you know, I'd make a lot of jokes and things, and people loved them. So like I always felt like I had it there. You know, I don't know if I necessarily knew how good I could be at it, but I had kind of like an inclination towards it. I enjoyed it, and it just like, I guess the way my brain works, like I just think in writing. Like a lot of times I'll write to help me clarify my thoughts. You know, it'll help me be like, I have these ideas, but I just need to get them out. So I'll start writing, and then I'll be like, oh, that's what I was trying to say.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, so I want to ask you some questions because it sounds like it comes naturally to you, but a lot of one person business owners, that isn't their skill set. They have the reason they started their business, but marketing may not be that like easy for them. Writing may not be that easy for them. So let's start honing in on email marketing specifically, since it's kind of what you're known for now. You've sold, well, over 100 million worth of products for your clients, which is kind of a big deal. Why should people be focusing on growing their email list instead of maybe their social media audience, working on their website constantly? What is it about email specifically? And where does finding a niche play into all of that?
So email is important because it's an asset that you own. Like you could take your email list with you. You know what I mean? Like if you want to move to a different email software, you can't export your Instagram followers. You can't export your Facebook followers. You can't export your TikTok audience. You know what I mean? And that's the biggest thing, because what happens with every social platform is there's like this, it's like a startup idea when these companies start up. And, you know, you saw this with not a great example, like Clubhouse, like everyone gets, you know, eventually they got everyone on the platform and they were going to plan to monetize it afterwards. Right. But you see this with every platform where like Facebook, if you remember, you know, a decade ago, they were getting people on the platform. They were giving you insane reach. So you can make a post and 80% of your followers, you have 10,000 followers and 8,000 people would see your post. And now you make a post on your business page and 1% of people see it, if you're even lucky, right? Because what happens is the platforms want to get you on. So they kind of hook you. It's like with the dopamine hits of like, oh, I'm posting all this content. You're getting people onto the platform. And then they pull that away. They pull the rug out from under you and say, now you have to pay for the reach with ads, which is understandable. They're a business. They need to make money, right? But with email, you know, if you have a 40 or 50% open rate, then you're reaching 40 or 50% of your people every time you send an email, right? And it's not always the same 40 or 50%. So you might be able to reach an even larger percentage of your audience. Maybe the 40% of people open this email, it's not the exact same. Maybe there's other people who didn't open that first one and the second one. So you could reach a much larger percentage of your audience with email because it's, you know, A, it's the asset and B, you own, the distribution is better. And it's really not that different because people are very intimidated by email. But then they'll post on social, they'll create content every day, and it's great content, but they just don't get the reach out of it, and they don't make any money because of the distribution level. Like, you're not getting the same distribution, the same reach, because, again, you're renting land on someone else's platform instead of owning your own platform. And that's where email is super important, because you own, like I said, you own the asset, right? That list if you start on another social platform, you're not starting zero followers anymore, because let's say a new social platform comes out tomorrow, you email your list, tell them you're on this platform, and then those people will follow you there, right? So that's an asset that you own. It's an asset you can continue to monetize. And the important stuff in people's lives comes to their email inbox, right? Like, as long as they're sending receipts and shipping notifications and password reset, you know, instructions to your inbox, that's where people are going to go back for all the important things in their life. So by you being someone who they say, I want to hear more from this person, and I'm going to sign up for their list, like, that's a very important relationship, because email is like private and intimate, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
But, you know, another thing that, because everything you're saying is so spot on, but I know so many people that had huge followings on some social platform and then got shut down for no apparent reason. They got hacked, or even they didn't get hacked. They just, for some reason, they shut them down because they said they violated some policy. There's nobody to talk to. It's crazy. And so, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. If you don't have an email address, you don't really have an asset.
Yeah. I mean, sorry, just to add to that, like, literally no reason sometimes. Like, sometimes people say inflammatory things or whatever, and, like, they'll get, you know, that'll happen, right? That definitely happens. But, like, I was looking one time with some e-com brand owner. He had a business, and he was advertising on Google, and they shut him down, no explanation. There was no recourse for him. He sold baby clothing. Like, it's not some, like, gray market, like, yo, is this legal? Like, it was the most boring, like, you know, above board business you could imagine to shut down for no reason. And, like, that happens all the time for no reason at all. And so it's, and I'm not anti-social media, because I think social media is exceptional for acquisition and for generating ideas and networking, especially. Like, that's where it's super important. And for ads, because I love ads. I run ads all the time. My clients run ads. Super important. But, like, you got to know, like, what tool is required for the job. Like, social media is for your acquisition. And then monetization and profitability and long-term revenue potential is from the people on the list.
Is email marketing for everybody? Because we have some solopreneurs who are like, I just need 3 or 4 clients at a time to make my business sustainable and to make my business work for me. I mean, I would argue that it's still important, but I want to hear your thoughts on that. If they aren't necessarily, like, for us, we, our newsletters, our event email, like, everything we do, we're speaking to a really large list. So it's like, well, it makes sense. But if you don't need that many clients, what's your take on that?
Every client you have, every client you have is going to leave you at some point. So, like, what's the plan to replenish them, right? You can work with a client for 10 years, but, like, at some, that's a universal truth. Like, you can work with a client for 50 years. At some point, you're going to die, or they're going to die, or they're going to move on, or you're going to move on. Like, or the dynamics of the change. Like, you know that. Right. Yeah. Like you're going to lose every client that you ever have. And that's okay. That's just the nature of client services. Right. So, like, it just depends on, like, how deep do you want your wait list to be? Right. And, like, for me, like, I'm going to be in business for a long time. So I want a deep wait list. I want a line of people around the block. And, like, that's where the list comes in. Right. Because I know that if I have more supply than I have, if I have more demand than I have supply, things are always going to be in my favor. So that's why I think the list is important. Like, do you need it? Like, no, you can, I know people who just do social and that's fine. Right. But, you know, I there's this fitness coach that I know. He has 250,000 followers. His Instagram got hacked, you know, like you guys were just saying before. And he had to, like, go to a backup account. He has a list too, but he doesn't really mail it. So, like, again, in those situations, like, having the asset that you own is the most important thing. Owning that first party data that you have is super important. So, like, you know, you don't need it, but why wouldn't you want it? Because if you could just send an email, one of my clients yesterday, she owns an e-commerce brand. She sent an email, and within 2 hours, she made $12,000. And I hit her up because it's been about 24 hours since she sent it. And she just made an additional, another $3,000 trickled in since we last spoke. And the email took her 10 minutes to write. So it's like she made, you know, $1,500 a minute. So, like, no, you don't need to do it. But, like, why wouldn't you want to do it? Like, that's my question. That's always my challenge to people.
No, that's a great point. Well, so she just made a lot of money because she sent out her list and everything. Let's start from there. How would a person go about building their list?
So, I mean, there's... My favorite preferred way is ads. Not everyone starts here though, because, like, obviously if you're starting out and you have 1 or 2 clients, cash flow is important. Ads take money because you have to learn about what your funnel is. And, you know, I'm not going to gloss over that. Like, it's a more advanced thing for a lot of people, but, I think ads are the best because you can use the pixel and you can use the algorithm to essentially say, hey, Facebook or Instagram or whoever, like, find me more people like this. And it will go do that because it's the best, most advanced, you know, like advertising system in the world. Like it knows who your people are. It'll find them as long as you have the right offer and you put the right worm on the hook to catch the right kind of fish you want. But before you get to that stage, I think the social content's great. What I like to do is I've done this time and time again. Like when I was starting out, I would just make a post on social and I would call this like a lead magnet test where essentially you just say, hey, I'm thinking about creating this thing. Remember the first one I ever did was like the 7 laws of email copywriting. And this is, you know, years ago. And I said, I'm thinking about creating, you know, I'm putting the finishing touches on this thing. If you're interested in it, like comment the word email on this post and I'll send it to you. I'll grab your email and I'll send it to you when it's ready. And I got like 50 something people respond on that. And I didn't even create the thing at that time. I just was testing out the idea. But again, like they don't know, like it doesn't matter if it's done or not, right? Because if no people commented, I wouldn't have wasted time to create it. But I put that post out. What's cool is as people are starting to comment on the post, what does that tell the social media algorithm? It tells the algorithm, wow, this post is really popular. We should push this out to more people. And you've seen this before, like, hey, my friend just commented on this thing from this person. I don't know. What is this about? And then you click over and you see it. Maybe you're interested in that too. So it's kind of like a snowball effect. So that's what I started doing initially because my list was like 55 people for months. And, you know, I was emailing and I was like, well, I'm not really making any money because I have 55 people and they didn't really have offers either. I said, how do I really start growing this? So that was one of the first things I did. And it jumped from like 55 to like 120. So, oh, okay. And I did another couple times to get to 200, 300, 400. And now we have some momentum, right? Now I had a feedback loop with the audience. I could say, what else do you need help with? What kind of content should I create? And that feedback loop is what instructed me to create more content to attract the right kind of people. And that just tends to grow and grow over time. So it's kind of like this flywheel effect you kind of build by having that dialogue with your audience.
So you're talking about you're creating content. You keep saying like, oh, and that's how money ended up in my pocket. How does creating content, because so much content these days is free. So how does creating the content lead to dollars in a person's pocket specifically from email?
The value in content is the unique insight that you give that no one else can give, right? Because you're not the only person teaching what you teach. And honestly, someone could type in, how do you do XYZ into ChatGPT? And in 4 seconds, they have a list of steps. But it's not about that. It's about context, right? So like that's where content, like good content is, like good content is context dependent. And you see this all the time because you'll see like, you know, Grant Cardone, and they'll post this thing about this 9-figure strategy and blah, blah, blah. And that's cool, but that's not really for you. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, there might be some useful application. It doesn't mean it's bad advice. It just means it might not be the right piece of advice for you at this given time in your life, right? So when we talk about context, that's what I mean. Like your coaching programs, your services, your courses, your e-commerce products, it's not for everyone. So you have to first determine like, well, who are the people that my stuff is for? And then how do I make the content aligned with the context for what my people need to hear? So that's the big difference. It's like the value is not in the stuff that you teach, but it's in the unique insight perspective that you bring based on what you've done and your own unique system and proprietary ways of solving that person's problems. So that's really what it comes down to. And that's part of it. And the other part of it is like, certain people are going to like you and certain people aren't going to like you. And that's okay because you don't want to be vanilla. You know what I mean? Like vanilla is vanilla. It's like, you know, like some people like vanilla, sure, but like, you know, it's not, no one's going to brag on Instagram that they had vanilla ice cream. You know, they're going to brag about this insane flavor with this triple chocolate with peanut butter, blah, blah, blah. Like that's the difference.
I would argue you're better off like being mushroom flavored ice cream than vanilla these days.
That'll go viral. Yeah, exactly. But that's what I mean. Like it's, you're not going to be the only person ever teaching what you teach, but that's okay because certain people will align with you who don't align with other people. And like, for example, like when I post content, like sometimes I'll tell stories like when I was a college wrestler, right? And all of other people were like, oh, I do BJJ. Like, I didn't know you wrestled, you know, and there's like a resonance between us because we have that shared bonding experience. Or other people like, hey, I played baseball in college or I played soccer or whatever, right? So it's like there's the college athlete, like we align on those, you know, it's like, oh, this person is kind of like me and now I have an affinity for them. And so the content is how you kind of get some of those facts out about your life, which gets certain people to like you. Because again, if you don't share any of that, then people are like, well, why should I trust you? Why should I like you? How are you different? You're just some person on my screen. And like, why should I care? But if you see like, oh, wow, this person just like me, they've walked on a similar journey, a similar path that I'm trying to walk on, then that's where you capture a lot of interest and attention and loyalty.
And so just to clarify, you are not charging for this content. You are just building up ways for people to know, trust, and like you. So that when they go to your site, they're more likely to purchase your services. It's not that you're charging for the content. It's that You're just building that relationship with the content, and then people will be like, oh, well, I want to work with this person, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, a lot of what I do is just sharing stories, like of me working with clients or stories from my life that are demonstrative of the thing I'm trying to sell. And then, you know, you have the paid offers for, like, you know, if you want my help doing this thing, solving this problem in your life, I have this program that is designed to do that. That's the next step. But then they have to, like, cross the chasm, right? They have to decide, okay, I want to enroll on this journey with this person. So a lot of it's like demonstration on the front end, and it is salesmanship. You know, it might be more content heavy rather than copy heavy, right? Although I think they are at its core the same thing, just different styles of execution. But it's what gets attention and gets people to say, oh, I kind of like this person. This person is interesting. I want to learn more about them because they're like me, or because I dig what they're saying. And then once they're in your world and you have captured their attention, then you can move them to the next level. Because again, like nothing really changes in their life until they make a buying decision. Like, people commit with their credit cards, right? Like, they commit to making a change in their own lives when they say, like, I give you all the content in the world. I mean, maybe you guys have done this. Like, you know, you tell someone, it's a friend, and you help them out for free, and you say, do X, Y, Z, and they never do it, right? They haven't committed with their credit card yet. So the initial content is really just to kind of maybe give them some initial wins, or to get them to shift their beliefs and kind of align your worldviews, right? And then the paid stuff is when you hit the gas and actually make things happen in their life.
Chris, I'm going to argue that what you're doing in that first phase is building trust with them, that they're trusting you. Because nobody turns over their credit card until they're sure they trust whoever it is they're dealing with. And it sounds to me like that's exactly what you're doing with giving them good information and good content.
Yeah, like when they see enough stuff, you know, once you share the 147th success story, they're like, okay, this person knows what they're talking about. Like, they've proved it. Like, I believe them now, you know. And because again, like, you probably had cold emails in your inbox and someone's like, I can get you this result. It's like, well, who are you? Like, you know, like, maybe you can, maybe you can't, but like, I'm just going to send you $5,000 I met you 5 minutes ago. Like, that's very hard to do, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and Chris, I have a question. So this, I meant to ask you this earlier, but just since we're talking about credit cards, maybe made me think of payments again. When you run the ads to build the list, what do those ads say? Is it like, I'm Chris Orzechowski, join my email list? Or like, what, they're short. So how, what are some effective copywriting tips for those?
So it depends on like what your offer is, right? Because I've done some free funnels where it's like, hey, I'm giving you this free template or training or webinar or whatever, right? Which is going to teach them a bigger thing. I've also done, you know, book funnels for my own stuff where, you know, we're spending, you know, $9,000-$10,000 a month on ads and, you know, recouping 80 to 100% of that on day zero, where, you know, you have some $8 book, and then there's an order bump and an upsell or two to kind of, you know, get an average order value that's equivalent to what your cost per acquisition is. You can't like put your whole intro and your whole, you know, resume into that ad, but it's like, you know, hey, are you suffering, you know, if you're suffering from this problem, like, I created this thing, it's going to help you. In case you want to know who I am, here's who I am, here's a few things you need to know about me, and if you have this problem, this thing will help you. Bullet, 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 call to action, urgency, or whatever, right?
Where is this ad? Where is this? Is this a Facebook ad?
I like doing Facebook ads. I think for most people, Facebook and Instagram is like an easy way to start. I've done YouTube too. For clients, I've done a lot of different networks, but I think Facebook and Insta, like, get started there. It's easy. It's proven. They have 2 billion people. They have your customers. You know what I mean? Like, they're there. It's not, oh, are my customers? They're there. There's 2 billion people there. They'll find them. But I think that's the way to go initially. And they don't have to be super long. Sometimes just like, hey, I'm giving away this book that does blah, 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 blah. And like, then when they read the book, they'll know more about you. But again, it's about like, what is the problem people have, right? You can call out the problem and offer the solution. Then you're starting to build that bridge of trust.
So is this a video? I mean, is this an ad with a video that people are watching? Or
we've done videos.
It seems like you have a lot of content.
Yeah, I mean, I've done videos.
It sounds like a lot of content for just words.
I've done videos. I've done static images. The thing is, like, when people are scrolling, they'll stop and say, ooh, what's this? I want this. Or I think I want this. Right? It's like, ooh, look at this pair of pants. That looks cool. What's this about? Oh, what's this brand? Let me click over and see what this is all about. And they land on the page and they start to read more. But even if it's like a book, it's like, what is this book about? I've never seen this book before. Wow, okay, it's a book that'll teach me X, Y, Z. I have this problem. Let me investigate. And they land on the page. Oh, here's who the author is. I've never heard of this person, but they've done X, Y, and Z. They've been in these outlets. Here's their, you know, here's some clients they've worked with or whatever, right? Or here's some testimonials. So again, like, you just need to capture the attention and the intent and on the front end. And then, you know, you don't have to put everything. Some of these ads are 300 words. Some of them are 800 words. Well, maybe not 800 words, maybe a little bit shorter than that, but it might be 100 to 500 words sometimes less, right? And just like, hey, I have this thing. I want to give it to you to help you solve this problem. And if people have that problem, then they become, oh, there's a solution for this. Okay, let me investigate the solution. And the cool thing is, like, the algorithm will find those people. Like, it knows who's having what problems at what time, you know? And this is not really, like, a new thing. Like, companies like Target, you know, departments, they've been doing this for decades now. Like, there's this famous story about, everyone thinks, like, oh, the data, they're mining our data. They've been mining your data forever. They've been mining your data for 50, 60 years, like, before the internet was even a big thing. Like, there was a story, I think it was Target back maybe in the 80s, where this girl started getting, she was, like, 16, she started getting flyers and coupons for diapers and formula and all these things. And the dad was like, what is this? Like, you know, he stormed into Target and started yelling at the managers, like, why are you sending my daughter all these things about diapers and you know, baby stuff? And turns out the girl was actually pregnant that the dad didn't know, because they just know based on your shopping behavior, and they have this data from all these public sources. And, like, now times that by 100 with Facebook, because they see everything you're clicking, they see what you're posting about, they see what you're liking, they see what videos you're viewing. So they take all of that stuff and say, we know who has certain problems, who's, you've probably done this before. You click on one, oh, well, that's a nice sweater. And then you get 100 ads for sweaters after that. Because the algorithm knows, and it knows who has what problems. And that's why it's useful for you, because it can find the right kind of people for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, that all makes sense from an ad standpoint. So I want to pivot, because we were talking about best practices for ads, but what we want to talk about today are emails. And so is there anything, like we talked about at the beginning of this interview, you were saying if 50% of the people open your email, you're reaching 50% of your audience at minimum, because it changes. Do you have any best practices for subject lines to increase that open rate, for the emails themselves to increase that click-through rate? Like, what? Because the click-through rate is arguably more important. what tips do you have for people that are new to email marketing, or even new to just, I don't even want to say marketing, but just emailing clients and stuff? What tips do you have for them in the email itself?
So the way I think about it is, I care about sales and really nothing else. I mean, like, I look at other markers to be like, to see if there's anything uncharacteristic. Like, if I have a 50% open rate, that's an email, I think it's 12%. I'm like, ooh, what happened? You know? But for the most part, as long as you're fine with deliverability, I don't worry about that stuff. What I think about with emails, like, if you're an influencer, people tune in to influencers like every day, right? They'll go on Instagram and it'll be like, oh, this person who is this like D-list celebrity, and they have this, you know, they post these stories, and it's like me at the park with my kids. And it's like, people tune into this stuff, right? And we all have people we like to follow for any number of reasons and in different domains, right? But like, that's what email is. It's the same thing. And people think it's different. People think, oh, well, I write an email, I have to be corporate. I have to, you know, title case my subject line. I need to make sure I'm very professional. It's like, no, it's just you getting content out that you would do on any other social platform. So if you like talking about memes, you can put memes in your emails. If you like telling stories from your life, what you did the last weekend with your kids, and you could tie it into your sales message, I do that sometimes too. You know, it's like your own little TV show, but it's in print. And it allows you to kind of unpack stories and use those stories as demonstration pieces for the concepts that you're trying to help people with.
I got an email printed out on my desk. It was the one that Sam Parr sent when he first started The Hustle. And the subject line is, after you signed up, the subject line comes in, look what you did, you little jerk.
Yeah, yeah. Like that.
From Home Alone.
Yeah, but everyone's like, announcing a new product in our product line. Like, it's like, okay, that's a sales message, right? But if you see something, like, I referenced when I made a meme, my new book that's coming out, and I had, you know, Patrick Bateman with the CD. I put a picture of my book on it and did these like little Patrick Bateman quotes. So I made my last subject line, do you like Huey Lewis in the news? And so, like, what does that have to do with anything, right? But like, you see that and it's like, new product, 50% off. It's like, you update your terms and conditions. Like, that's what all those subject lines say. And it's like, you like Huey Lewis in the news? It's like, oh, that's American Psycho. I like that movie. And you click through, and then there's story, and there's all these other things and memes. And so, like, that's how I think about everything. That's how I think about email. I always try to make my emails sound like they're coming from a person rather than a corporation. And that's like, I'll have everything lowercase. I like to make it look different and stand out in the inbox. I always like to make it look like it's coming from a person. Like, what would a friend send to you?
Yeah.
Interesting. I love that. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
What would a friend
send to
you?
Very cool.
That's a great takeaway. And Chris, you did a little shameless plug that you kind of snuck in the rug there. And
I'd be remiss. My first
rodeo. I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about this new book that you have coming out very soon. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, it's called The Moat. And the reason I called it that was because that's what we're all trying to do, right? Everyone's trying to build a moat around your business, your brand. And so I said, well, let me write a book about that, because, you know, kind of harkens back to what we said at the beginning. Like, everyone is teaching what you're teaching. Everyone's selling what you're selling. Like, you have 1,000 competitors, maybe 10,000 competitors, right? But how do you differentiate yourself and build a system for your business that can help you multiply capital in cash positive way, whether it's through ads or whether it's through all the marketing that you're doing, so that you can grow, so that you have margins, so that you have acquisition systems and retention systems. So it really just unpacks all of that. It's like my complete system. I do a lot of fractional CMO work too. Like, I used to do a lot of email stuff. I had an email agency. Now I do more fractional CMO work, where I'm looking at everyone, like your entire brand's marketing, and helping people grow that way. And I just realized a lot of people need the same stuff and they don't have it in place. So this book essentially walks you through. MOAT stands for mission, offers, acquisition, traction, right? Like, those are the four letters in the MOAT. And it kind of walks you through like how to implement each one of those steps so that your brand can grow and you can create that flywheel where you're acquiring the right kind of customers. They're bought into the vision for what you have. You have the right front end offers and back end offers, and then you have traction to where you can keep acquiring them, keep monetizing them, and then scale up.
Very cool. Well, Chris, if people are interested in reading this book, where can they find it and when?
Yeah, actually, I'm starting the pre-order tomorrow, and then the launch, it's going to be on Amazon, and then it'll be Black Friday's when it officially goes live. But starting tomorrow, it'll be open for pre-orders. But 100yearbrand.co is my website. I'll probably have a link to Amazon there, or you can just go to Amazon. But yeah.
And listeners, we're recording this on November 16th, 2023. So by the time this airs, the book will be available. So be sure
Don't wait.
To check it out. Don't wait. Go get it.
Please.
Well, this has been such a fun episode. We ask all of our guests this, and since you help so many people find success through email marketing, we have to ask you what your favorite quote is about success.
Oh, that's a tough one. My favorite quote about success is actually kind of an interesting one. I'd say it's from Napoleon Bonaparte, where he says, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. And the reason why I like that quote and how it relates to success is that a lot of times when you're out there building your business, you see what other people are doing, because everyone always presents the best version, where they present their wins. And the way that the algorithms work is you just see win after win after win from these other people. And a lot of times you start to feel down about the work that you're doing. You feel bad about yourself. But you might not know what's going on behind that business, right? And people might be bragging about things, but their life is an absolute dumpster fire. And maybe they're making mistakes, or maybe they're rolling onto a new platform. You think, should I do that too? Like, oh, they just got set up on YouTube. Should I be doing that? Or they just got set up on this platform. They just launched this kind of product. But a lot of times, some of these initiatives fail that people do. And by you going out and chasing what everyone else is doing, instead of staying focused and doubling down on what you do in your business that works, that makes your business grow and makes your business awesome, you don't want to interrupt your enemies when they're making a mistake. You don't want to point that out. You want to let them just continue to do what they're doing and keep your blinders on to focus on your own business. So it's a little bit of a weird one, I know, but that's always what I think about. Like, I just focus on myself and multiplying my own capital, because, you know, capital allocation is everything. Like, when you get money in your business, what do you do with that money? How do you grow that money into more money? And that's what we're trying to do. That's what your job is as a founder, even if you're a one-person business, even if you have a zero team. Like, you have money coming in. How do you continue to grow it and build the machine that you build and turn your own flywheel?
Absolutely. Well, Chris, thank you so, so much for coming on today. We will include the links to your website and everything in our show notes. Joe, you look like you're going to say something.
No, I just want to say how awesome this was. This was such a great interview and such a great set of advice for solopreneurs, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me.
Absolutely. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next time on the One Person Business Podcast.
Take care.
You may be going solo in business, but that doesn't mean you're alone. In fact, millions of people are in your shoes, running a one-person business and figuring it out as they go. So why not connect with them and learn from each other's successes and failures? At LifeStar, we're creating a one-person business community where you can go to meet and get advice from other solopreneurs. Be sure to join in on the conversations at community.lifestar.com. That's community.lifestar with two R's.com.